We read for you. Atlantis, the Dark Continent. A book by Paul Williamson and Linda Braithwaite. Read by JP on Wolf Spirit Radio. Atlantis, the Dark Continent. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yes, you are indeed listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. And here we are. And I'm looking at the thickness of the book and how long I've got to go. It's probably going to be another 2 1-hour shows, so... I don't know if we're going to finish it tonight, but we'll see how far we get. So, still on chapter 17, and we're towards the end of the period of Atlantis. We're coming to the end of the island. The south was devastated, and there's been vibration coming up in the sanctuaries. Military rule is taking over, and there's not very many places left that are safe. So some of the healers have gone to a town. There's a mission. Preparations in the city. It is a horrible place to live in these cities. The streets are so narrow. There are many, many people crowded here in their stone buildings. The streets smell. People here are obviously poor and unhappy. It is really quite terrible. But we found a house where we meet, and where my sister and I can live. And there are some people willing to work with us. We have already been here some months, but now there are about a dozen of us meeting regularly. We need quite a few more people yet, but the ones we have can be our foundation. When we are in the house together, we meditate. We attune with the earth spirit. Usually, I place my communicator stone in the middle of our circle. Using that, we can link with the sanctuary in the mountains and with Shastar. Generally, it is just after sunset when we meditate so that this can be coordinated. We try to link with the sphere from the Earth Healing Cavern so that this can help us channel positive energy and help to draw back the energies that have built up here negatively. In addition, we try to channel positive and loving energies to the population here. We feel we must be having some success, otherwise we would not be attracting more people to join us. However, these meditations take a big effort. There is such an overwhelming energy of fear and oppression hanging over this city that it is very difficult to break through. Quite often I feel exhausted in our sessions. However, if our numbers keep growing and enough people start to engage in these practices, then surely that could be of help. Now that we have a core group of supporters, we are able to engage more fully in the second stage of our plan. We are interested to study the activities of the healing temples and the oracles, which are so much influencing the people. My sister and I are working separately on this. The temple where I go to is the main one in the center of the city. This I visit quite regularly. I have seen that there are 3 young women used as oracles. They are rotated. Behind them is the priest who controls them. He stays more in the background, and the oracles are used to attract the people's attention. There is a common ritual which is conducted daily. As the people gather, the priest draws them in, summoning them to come close and listen. He suggests the profound truths which the oracles want to spread, and he goes around placing his hands on different people's heads as if in blessing. However, this is just a gesture, as far as I can see. What he really wants is compliance. He's probably using NLP. The priest is a rather tall, thin man. His robes are elaborate and designed to give him authority. He expects people to bow down to him as he approaches, and I've noticed how satisfied he looks then. The stare of his eyes is cold and feels dangerous to me. Most people will not look at him. The oracles say more or less exactly what I had thought. The gist of it is that the people need to direct their energies to the leaders of the cities, so that these leaders can bring great power and wealth to all of them. In the next stage of the ritual, they all do chants together. The chants are like prayers where the people are directed to draw energy from deep within themselves and from the earth itself to the leaders of the cities. I have become aware that there are giant crystals hidden behind the stage. These crystals lap up the energies from the people. They are like leeches drawing the power. During this practice, I need to be very strong and centered so that my own life energy is not drawn away. The people seem so drained and lifeless after this is done. I don't know why they keep coming back for more, except that they are instructed to do so. The priest exerts his power at these moments to insist that the people return for the next service. And when it is over, the people walk away as if they are defeated. This priest and his colleagues are feeding themselves with power, energetically from the people, as well as the earth. So it is not just materially where the people are becoming poorer, but on other levels as well. Today, as I look at that priest, he catches my eye, but I am determined not to look away. The expression in his face, though, is little more than contempt, and he soon turns his attention to other matters. I feel almost a hatred for him at this moment. It is later now, and we have gathered all the people that we need. I must admit that I feel rather nervous at this point, because what happens next will be so crucial. We try to meditate together and ask for guidance. All that occurs is that we feel love enveloping us and wanting us to go out from us further into the city. Tomorrow we plan to make our moves. There are 5 temples in the city. We have a group to go to each one. I will take my group with me to the large temple in the center of the city. My sister will lead a group to one of the other temples. We have made our arrangements as best we can. Tonight we need to rest, so we will be ready. Uprising. The people are gathering by the temple for the daily ritual, and I am in the crowd. There are a dozen of us here today spread out amongst the people. We are wearing simple clothes, as we always do on these occasions, so that hopefully we will not attract notice. We have become aware that there is only a small military presence for the various temple activities. No one has tended to challenge the authority of the priest, and so he has felt quite secure. In some ways, this is quite comforting, and it gives us more scope and freedom to issue our challenge today. However, if people have become so placid that they just accept and submit to everything that this priest does, what chances do I have to be able to help rouse the population so they will behave differently? The oracle is speaking. She is seated, her head slightly tilted back, as if in trance. Her voice is quite loud, monotone, and almost expressionless. Clearly, she has been well trained to be able to project her voice so well. She is speaking as usual about the greatness of the empire that is being built, and how important it is to give homage to the leaders of the city. I have to choose my moment, the best moment to do this. Suddenly, I am standing up. It is lies! I am standing. It is all lies. I strive to be heard over her voice. It is only these priests and leaders wanting power for themselves. I try to say how they are destroying the land, urging the people to join us and oppose this. My friends are standing up too, issuing their own challenge, echoing the sentiments expressed by me. It is all happening very quickly. The crowd is stirring. They do not know what to do. The oracle has opened her eyes and returned to normal consciousness. She looks pale and shaken. The priest is striding forward to the front of the stage. In his hand he has a sword. Certainly he is very angry. "Seize them!" he commands to his military friends. The crowd begin to disperse. I keep shouting as long as I can. I hope that I have moved the people enough. I hope they can find their own courage to assert their rights. I shout, "See what kind of people they are? See what they do with their swords?" The military are coming. They are hacking through the crowd to get to us. People fall down injured. The priest is trying to wade through the crowd himself, so we have to get out of here. I have to move fast. But we have planned this carefully. Our escape route is well marked. The people do not attempt to stop me. I rush along the alley and through the building where I can go through another building and into the clear. Two of my friends are with me. There is a group of soldiers in the streets in front of us. We slow right down and walk very casually around them. Then we continue so we can return to our base. We've done it. A tragic loss. It takes us a while to assemble at our base, and there is plenty of nervous, excited chatter. I am anxious to learn about the other groups. Each of the leaders of these groups has a communicator stone. I am trying to get through to them. It's almost like Skype. Something does not feel right. I feel increasingly disturbed. I am not able to get through to my sister. It feels wrong. I hope she is okay. She does not respond to my signal. One of my sister's group has just arrived. He's almost hysterical. My sister is dead. They had to leave her there. What? I cannot comprehend this. I have to sit down. How can this be? My sister and I, we were always going to be together. It is later now. I have tried to come to terms with my grief. One of my friends, Shula, has tried to comfort me. He has been a great support to me. There has been much sadness in our group. Everyone knew how much my sister meant to me. We all admired her so much for her courage and tenacity and her caring love. Apparently, my sister was very brave. She got up just as I had done, and she continued to yell defiance to the authorities even after the military were coming. And she didn't leave herself enough time. How could she do this to herself? She didn't leave herself enough time to get away. And soon some military were upon her. They stabbed her. They did not care that other people were around. They just stabbed her. And she died right where she had been speaking. She just sank to the ground and didn't have a chance. The people were horrified. However, then, the oracle started talking about subversives, about people not being true believers. They tried to con the crowd again into accepting that. But they were stirred, the crowd. My sister's words had their impact. They saw that she was dead as a consequence of what she had said. The people scattered. They did not stay any longer. Now, though, I am questioning everything. I feel rather shattered inside. I know there was always a risk of death or injuries, but I never really had thought it would happen, especially to my sister. I had somehow assumed, because what we wanted to do was good, that we would be protected and that no harm would come to us. That belief has proved to be mistaken. I don't know how much I wish to continue with our project if people are going to die. That wasn't what we intended. Shula has been talking with me. He is urging me not to give up. My sister was speaking up for the land. The land needs our help. Now that we have started, we have to continue. The group are looking for me. The group are looking to me for my leadership. With a heavy heart, I finally agree to allow our plans to unfold further. I cannot prevent, though, doubts from gnawing away inside of me. Meeting with the enemy. It is some months later. We have been continuing in our efforts with mixed results. Numbers have dwindled at the temple meetings. People do not feel obliged to go anymore. Sometimes we attend and yell our defiance, but it's getting harder each time. The military presence has grown much larger and more reactionary. A few of our group has been injured and taken. There has been nothing we could do. As a group, we have become very close and committed, particularly with our meditations and spiritual practices. However, for anyone doing what we are doing, it is becoming increasingly difficult. The military will not allow any form of spiritual worship or practices besides what is conducted officially at the Oracle Temples. Therefore, people are not able to be open with their wish for an alternative to that organized by the priests. We have noticed that in some of the statues erected to honor the city leaders, have been damaged. So people are reacting. Certainly because the numbers have become so small at the temple services, the amount of energy being drained off has collapsed as well. This is encouraging to us. We are aware, though, that there have been other methods of extracting the earth energy, which the authorities in the city have been exploiting. But I have been disappointed by people's lack of fight. To all appearances, life has mainly gone on as if nothing happened. People seem too afraid to stand up for their rights. What is fascinating is all the healers, all the people interested in a more spiritual way of life, are being forced underground. They are being forced to carry on their activities in secret. We have to encourage this to grow, because it is only through engaging in spiritual activity that we can counter the poverty and counter the transfer of power. However, I don't know anymore if we can succeed. The military have been raiding houses looking for healers and subversives. Anyone under suspicion has been arrested and their house burnt down. There have been reports of torture and mutilation. People are being offered money for information about what we are doing, so people are losing trust. The numbers at our meetings have also begun to decrease. The people with us are feeling less and less safe. I sometimes wonder if the only thing we have succeeded in doing is to arouse the anger of the military. One day, I feel that this confrontation has gone on for long enough. I can think of only one option. We must seek a meeting with the authorities, offering to suspend our public activities if they agree to listen to our thoughts about the situation. I feel there is little chance, really, that they will be receptive to us, but if there is any chance at all, I feel we need to take it. I talk with Shulo about it, and he agrees. We have arranged for this meeting to take place. I recognize that for them, they would consider it advantageous to meet with us, because what we have done has been very disruptive. However, I do not trust them. In my negotiations with them, I have insisted on no military presence, that everyone attending this meeting be unarmed and that the meeting be held at a location determined by us. I'm quite surprised that they have agreed to all these demands. We have arranged a building to meet in where we have organized possible escape routes should we need them. The meeting is to be held in a room around a table to seat six of them and six of us. I hope I have done enough to protect us. Some of the group will be scattered around the streets and alleys nearby to hopefully warn us in case of trouble. The meeting is about to start. I have checked with my stone. It is highly dangerous. There are our military about very close, but I do not know exactly where they are. I feel, though, that having gone this far, I cannot turn back now. Two of their negotiating team are familiar to me. There is, of course, the priest from the main temple in the city. When he sees me, his eyes light up with a viciousness that he can hardly restrain. Their chief spokesman is the administrator who spoke to me before I left the temple in the town of my birth. I still sense a coldness about him that brings a fear to my heart. For a while, they let us talk. I tried to explain about the imbalance of the energy, the threat to the land and consequences of their actions. Also, in terms of the happiness and well-being of their own population. Shula backs me up, but it feels like talking to a brick wall. I suggest that if they do not stop what they are doing, then it may cause the destruction of the whole land. They won't listen. I sense they are too intoxicated with their own need to acquire power for themselves. The administrator motions me to stop. He wants a turn now. The administrator dismisses any arguments and asks me again, would I like to join with him? He tells us that there is no future in what we are doing, so that if we do not stop our activities with immediate effect, then we will be totally crushed, and there will be orders for us to be all killed. With a cold smile, he says that the military have been very lenient in their approach to this so far. However, if any more objections are raised at the temple meetings, they have orders to be totally ruthless. And if any of us were found or captured, then that person would be tortured and killed brutally in public, as an example to others. He's trying to make us afraid. I cannot agree to what he says. There is an uncomfortable silence around the table. Slowly, the administrator raises his arm. He is giving a signal. One of their negotiators goes to the door. I know he will call the military. They will arrest us. I try to warn the others. We have to get out of here. The priest is on his feet. He is trying to grab members of our group. Meanwhile, the administrator has edged away. He does not take part in physical battles. I try to help the others, but I know it is more important for us to break free. We have to run. I escape through the side door. Some of my companions are with me. We are being pursued. We have to go fast. Down corridors, through doorways. We have to keep going. It is desperate. We have some of our people to help us. A door is closed, a barrier put up. It gives us more time. Eventually, I can stop. The military are filling the streets, but we've got through the worst. I can pause for a few moments. Swiftly, I reach for my stone. As I slow my breathing down and concentrate, I can assess the situation. Two of us have been captured. One of them is Shula. As I see more deeply, I perceive that they're being treated roughly and with violence. I know that the administrator's threat will be carried out with them. My body starts to shake with shock. The last thing I hear before I have to turn away from the stone is the sound of Shula's screams. Part 3. Prison. I feel I have no choice. Whenever I think of Shula and Kapik, I feel agony inside and I cannot stop thinking about them. I don't sleep. I must take responsibility. It was my idea to call for that meeting, therefore it was my initiative that led to their capture. I know what I have to do. We will have to abandon our project. I feel that it is not right anymore. When activities become like fighting, with people dying and being hurt, then the love goes out of what we do. Our whole endeavor becomes clouded by bitterness and despair. The power structures in the city are still very much in place. People are afraid to oppose the military. If anything is going to change what is happening here and help the land, then there will have to be another way. I feel we have done all we can. My friends support me. They also feel defeated. I just pray that something can be done. As I look into my stone, I sense the danger and the tension at the moment, not only in these cities but across the land. Things are not going well. It feels as though action is needed, and urgently, before it is too late. Even when I communicate with Shastar, his energy does not seem as calm as it did before. He is anxious for me to be careful, encouraging me not to sacrifice myself. However, it is too late. I am passing on my communicator stone to one of my friends, so it may be returned safely to the sanctuary in the mountains. I am going to offer myself up in exchange for Shula and Kapik being returned unharmed. In my heart, I would rather die myself than have them die or suffer any more. I don't know if the authorities will accept my proposal. I have sent a message guaranteeing that if Shula and Kapik are released and they do not kill or torture me, then we will stop all of our disruptive activity immediately. I have argued in my message that if they do not fulfill these conditions, then we have laid preparations to cause even more disruption than before. This is bluff, of course, but I had to give them a reason to release my friends. I know that they may well kill me, and there is nothing anyone can do about it. To that I feel resigned. I'll just have to go ahead with this in any case. When I think of Shula, I think of all the love, support, and care he gave to me when my sister, Sheena, died. I owe him a lot for that. I owe him a lot for that. It is morning time now. I am standing in the square outside the temple. There are a few people about. I notice some birds flying overhead. Inside, I feel a strange sense of peace and stillness, even though my stomach is knotted with fear. I call out to them that I am here, and they can take me now. The priest appears, and he has soldiers with him. They come and get me, jostling, pushing, grabbing, and pulling me into the building. The priest grabs my hair and spits at me. They are all very rough and rude. I try very much to control my temper, so I will not react to them. The priest is very angry with me. He slaps my face and tells me that I am a fool. He taunts me that if I think my message has been received as I want it to be, then I am mistaken. They beat me more until my body feels numb and I can hardly feel the pain. I try not to resist and just let them do it. The priest tells me that he'll let my companions go, but they have been so much tortured that he think they'll be of no use to anyone anymore. He says that I can expect the same for myself, or even worse. This man seems to relish trying to make me afraid. He cannot reach me, though. I have tried to withdraw my consciousness as much as I can. My passiveness angers him even more. They have put chains around me, and I have been taken downstairs to somewhere very dark, some kind of cell. It is a small room in total darkness. This is where I had been left. I feel very small and very lonely. The priest has said to me that this is where I'll die. He has not given any hope to me. I wonder about my friends, but I do not know anything about them. I hope that they were not as badly mutilated as the priest made out. I hope they were released. Now I only have my meditation practices to try to sustain myself from within. I don't know how long I can continue that. They have left me a small amount of water to drink, but that is all. Probably they want to draw out my suffering for as long as they can. I want to try to seek inner guidance, acceptance, and peace. I do not wish to blame anyone for what has happened to me, but I want to live if I can. It is much later. I have become very sensitive to sounds. Occasionally there have been footsteps, a bowl of water left through a gate at the bottom of the door. Perhaps they monitor me a little, but no one has visited. Mostly, all I hear is my own breathing and heartbeat, and that's all. The room smells, and I have become very weak. My body has become wasted, and it is a huge effort for me to move. My limbs ache, and most of the time I slouch, crouched in a corner. I can hardly concentrate anymore to focus my awareness within. I feel that soon it will be all over for me. My body feels close to collapse. I feel cold and shivery. Someone is coming, and they have brought food. The door is left slightly ajar, and there is light beyond. It is agony for my eyes. I cannot look. My body can only take a little food. I eat slowly and gradually and drink in between. I'm given time. I can hardly think any more what they want. A soldier comes to take me somewhere else. By now, my eyes have adjusted to the light. I cannot walk. He calls for a colleague. They have to carry me more or less to the room where they want me to go. I am pushed into a chair. There are a group of men in here. The priest and administrator are two of them. Soon I am being questioned by the administrator. He has that same soft, cold voice. I can hardly make out what he is saying, but he is talking about the healing sanctuary in the mountains. He wants to know where it is located, how many people are there, how it is protected. I will not tell him. I make out that I do not understand. The priest comes over and slaps me. He threatens me that if I do not cooperate with them, then I will go back to my cell and die. My body shivers and shakes uncontrollably. I do not want to die in such a suffering way. I do not know if I can resist any more, but I cannot betray my friends. He pulls my hair and hurts me. The priest punches me in the ribs. I feel bleeding inside. I'm sure the bone is broken. I try not to move, to cough or splutter. I cannot take much more. I still don't want to die. He knows he cannot make me talk. I won't say anything. I can hardly focus any more on what they are doing. I'm being moved. They're dragging me upstairs, out of the temple confines and opening up the door. I'm being dumped outside, left in a crumpled heap. Why would they do that? My breathing is shallow and rasping. It is night time. I hope someone will help me. My body aches so much I can hardly move. They're letting me go, and I do not understand.
Let me win.
That's a very what we call an American fade. there we go. So, poor old fella, he's been held in the prison. Anyway, release. The ground is cold underneath me. I'm hardly wearing anything. I feel so weak. There is a woman bending over me, an older woman. She was here before and went away. I have a little strength to acknowledge her. She has something warm for me to drink. I try to let it pass down my throat without spilling it all. She has to pour it for me. I feel grateful, though. She wants to help me. The woman has a cloth with a form of ointment. She's rubbing it gently over my wounds, onto the aching parts of my body. It feels soothing where she has touched me. The blood supply is stimulated and is making me feel more conscious again. Now she's trying to move me. She's trying to get me to lean against her, to stand up. I know I cannot weigh very much now, but it is so difficult. She tries to rub some more of the ointment in. However, my body just wants to collapse. I can't go very far at all. She tries to carry me, but I am rather big for her. I feel myself becoming dizzy. I may be losing consciousness. Waking up, I find I am in a room, the old woman by my side. She has me lying in the bed and is telling me she has got friends to help bring me here. Who is this woman? She is kind to me. I never want to go through anything like that again. I still feel exhausted and faint. My body is in pain. She gives me a few sips of a broth to drink. My body needs that. I feel warmer inside and reassured. I close my eyes again. There is someone with the old woman now. She says I've been sleeping for a long time. This man introduces himself as a healer. He says he wants to help me. I feel the warmth from his hands. Waves of peace and energy flow over me as he works upon the various parts of my body. He tells me I need much rest and recuperation. I know he is right. He informs me that he'll come to attend me on a daily basis until I'm well again. I'm able to sit up now. My body is slowly regaining strength. The old woman and the man are with me. They have been very kind to me. Somehow, I feel puzzled by the events of my release from prison. I try to express my concern to them that I may be being watched by the military because of who I am. The old woman tries to reassure me that she saw no sign of any observers when I was brought here. She says her friends are few in number, but she can trust them. The healer tells me about his work, how careful he has to be working independently of the authorities. He has to work in a very confidential manner, and he always checks his contacts before committing himself to any course of treatment with anyone. In reply to my concerns, he says that he senses we are safe and I should not worry. Although they say and do all the right things, something does not feel at ease in me. I do not trust them. The healer asks me what I have been doing, how I come to be in the situation where I have needed his help. To this, I tell him my story. He sympathizes about the corruption of the authorities and suggested that he would like to get away himself. When I ask about the activities of the temples, he tells me they have virtually stopped operating and the services they offer have become quite minimal. When I look out of the window, I notice how the season has changed. I must have been in that prison for months. The time just passed. I am now strong enough to stand and I move around. There is still some tenderness around my ribs from the blow I received from the priest, but I know that soon I will be well enough to make my next steps. The healer has been making tremendous efforts, I feel. The healer has been making tremendous efforts, I feel, to become my friend. He has been asking me about my plans, whether he could come with me if I plan to leave the city. I still do not trust him. One night, I am thinking about this. I wonder if I have been set up so the authorities can find information about the healing sanctuary in the mountains. I don't want to betray my friends. This healer has been very kind to me. But if he is really meant to find a life beyond this city, then he can do so without me. The risks are too great. I cannot compromise my integrity. In this situation, I am better off acting on my own. I have decided to make my escape. In recent days, the healer has been staying and sleeping in the house with us. It is as though, as I have become stronger, that he has wanted to keep his eye on me. This has made me more suspicious. I have given him a date when we could leave together to pacify him. But I will not keep that. It is night time and I have left the house. I do not know where in the city I have been staying, but I basically know the direction in which I need to go, and that is up. I thread around different streets and alleys to create diversions in case there are people trying to trace me. However, there is no sign of anyone behind me. I sense that I am safe. Still, I need frequent rest to conserve my energy. At last, I feel I am going home. The further I am able to get away from the center of that city, the more relaxed I feel. Finally, I have come to the familiar hills around the entrance to the mountain sanctuary. It has been a long journey. Entering into the sanctuary, I see Shastar. He looks older, but when he sees me, his joy is unconfined. I virtually collapse into his arms. Several of my friends are there too. They are so surprised and delighted to see me. Shastar thought I must be dead. I have met with Shular and Kapik. Somehow my friends managed to get them here. They both received terrible injuries with permanent burn marks on their skin. Shular has had his leg amputated below the knee. His foot was so mangled by the torturing that even the psychic surgeons from the sanctuary here could not save it. God knows what he had to endure. Somehow, though, Shular is smiling and very pleased to see me. He has obviously had a lot of healing. However, I am amazed at his powers of acceptance. Even with his disability, he has dedicated himself to continue with this healing work. It was the priest, of course, that did it, or others who did it under his control. Such a cruel man, I feel a lot of pity for my friends. I feel such a sadness in my heart that our activities could lead to so much suffering. It is really very sad. The whole project to disrupt the temples in the cities, to activate the people and their sense of right and wrong, has been abandoned now. As we study the sphere in the earth cavern, the shaking has further increased, and energy is still being drained in that direction. Our plan did not work. At least I can stay for a while in the sanctuary here. The energies are so peaceful and vitalizing, especially after that city. I can work here. I need time to recover and reassess my purpose in all this. The Sacred Mountain. It is some years later. I feel now that I have fully recovered from the efforts of my ordeal in the city. I have been resting, regaining my strength, and doing healing work around the sanctuary. It has given me much happiness to use my communicator stone again, to be in contact with other healing sanctuaries, and to monitor the general situation in the land. Shastar is in agreement with me that the energy imbalance has continued to worsen. Sometimes, when I have been in the earth cavern, I have sensed a deep rumbling from below me. It has felt as though Mother Earth is deeply unhappy and stirring from within. This has made me feel very frightened. From my stone and from other sources, there have been reports of fighting among the different factions to the east of the continent, and this is causing concern. The soldiers there are using crystal power and drawing energy from the earth using crystals to fight and destroy buildings and communities. This, of course, is making the whole system even more unstable. Shastar and I sometimes feel quite desperate. However, there is some hope in a message we've just received. We have had a request for some help from the elders of the Sacred Mountain. Now I've had to ask Shastar about this, and he has tried to explain to me. He has told me that there are 5 major power points, places of enormous power in the land. These power points are the main regulators of the earth energy system throughout the land. They are like outposts through which the earth energy can express itself. All of these power points exist in the mountain areas, and the knowledge of them has always been concealed from ordinary people, so they would not fall prey to corruption. Perhaps the strongest and most powerful of these 5 places is the one known as the Sacred Mountain. Usually, only a small number of healers live and work there. These are people carefully selected, and with the utmost integrity and complete dedication to serve the interests of the land and the earth energy. The fact that the elders of the Sacred Mountain have called for help is not a good sign. Shastar feels they would only do that as a last resort. They must feel they have no other means of coping with the instability of the land. These elders have called for as many healers as possible to come and convene within the Sacred Mountain. The message is being conveyed to as many places as possible. The elders are terming it a situation of real emergency. They are saying that help may be needed for a considerable duration. I want to go. Not only am I curious to see this Sacred Mountain, if there is a chance for me to help the land, I want to do it. Shastar has decided to reduce the staffing levels at the sanctuary to a minimum, so as many healers as possible can attend the request. He, of course, will stay. I am going with my 2 good friends, Nikkei and Vulmar. They are 2 healers with whom I have worked very closely since returning from the city. I am sorry that due to his disability, Shular cannot be with us, but there will be many others. It is later. We have been journeying for some days, further inland and to the south. The way has been hard, but we have managed. My stone has served as a navigational instrument. Just now, we have had our first glimpse of the Sacred Mountain. It is a crystalline mountain, and there are no trees that grow upon it. To climb it would be very difficult because its faces are so sheer. However, there is an internal entrance near its base, and that is the route we must take. Before we proceed, though, we need to stop. The energy field of the Sacred Mountain is extremely strong. Even being this close has made me feel quite disoriented. We need time to adjust. The elders advise us to take this last stage very slowly. It is later. We have finally made it to our destination. Now we are within the Sacred Mountain, and it is an awe-inspiring sight. We are standing in this vast cavern, hundreds of us huddled together in a circle. In the center of the cavern is a huge crystal cluster, with crystals unbelievably large, much larger than any I have ever seen. Beside the crystals, the people look very tiny. We are able to link right around the crystal base, but we are aware that the roots of these crystals go much deeper down. It is a natural cavern, created by the Earth Mother. I feel very small and humble to be here. The elders of the sanctuary community want to welcome us and speak more of their intentions. They have a ceremony in mind that they wish to perform with us at the beginning of our work together. There is an immense feeling in the cavern, peaceful and very quiet, but with a majesty as well. When the elder speaks, the resonance of his voice reaches each one of us very clearly. We will be working with sound and visualization. We are told that the energy alignments of the land have shifted so far out of balance that drastic action is needed to restore it to its rightful order. What is being proposed is a practice to withhold energy from those places where the worst abuses are happening, stopping the energy from flowing along those particular meridians, and then allowing the energy for the rest of the land to flow more easily, to recover its natural dynamism and feel its vitality again. The places where the energy is to be withheld are the areas of the northern cities, the cities to the east, and a settlement to the far south of the land. Immediately, I wonder what will happen to those places where the energy is withheld. The thought is given that once their power is removed, these people will not be able to abuse the system any longer. This answer does not satisfy me. I cannot question these elders, though. I must respect their wishes and do all I can to help them in their time of need. They are servants of the earth, and I feel it is a privilege to be asked to work with them. The ceremony begins. One of the elders leads us with prayers, asking the Earth Mother for forgiveness for the abuses of her children, all of us, on this land. The elder asks on our behalf for the Earth Mother to help stop these abuses. We are guided to attune to the spirit of the earth through the crystal in our midst. As I am being led, I feel myself going very deep in meditation. Then we attune together, being guided through the many aspects of adjustment for the energy patterns across the land. In my thoughts, I feel that I have become one with everyone else here. Our thoughts have merged and unified upon a single intention. We can feel and sense that our actions are having their effect. By the time we complete it, I can feel that the earth has become quieter beneath us. The elders are gaining the results they seek. When we complete the ceremony with a prayer of thanks, I feel a mixture of exhilaration and exhaustion. The power of doing this with so many is so tremendous. The elders have informed us that our work will need to be sustained continuously over a long period of time. A shift rotation system is being applied so that all can have sufficient rest. There will be different methods of energy work and healing needed to consolidate what we have started. The elders expect that the happiness of our land will be ample reward for all our labors. When I am resting, I feel very confused. I am not so sure. My thoughts keep turning to those people in the cities. What will happen to the people there when the love of the earth energy cannot reach them anymore? What will happen to the land around those cities? How will the military and those in authority react when they cannot tap into that source of power they so greedily want? Whatever improvements the rest of the land may enjoy, for these people, it may make them even more hungry for power. I wish this may not be so, but inside I feel much disquiet. I just hope the elders of the Sacred Mountain know what they are doing and that they have considered all the consequences of our actions.
You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.